Sachs, hello, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Good morning to you. I want to talk about these two Barbadoses that you raised earlier. But before I get to that, I don't know why you're trying to separate the minister from the NCF. The NCF is an agency that falls directly under the purview and supervision of the minister.
Yeah.
If everything went right yesterday, he would have been receiving all of the plaudits, all of the commendations, and all of the encomia. So if something went wrong, why can't hold some of the criticism?
No, that's not what I am about, to shield him from the criticism. I am here dealing with process, and something is wrong in a country where everything appears to have to go to a minister when you have an agency that has been set up for that purpose. In other words, the process should work. When it goes to the minister in these circumstances, the process has failed.
But the process
and if the process fails, let me also say to you that ultimately the minister will take the responsibility for process failure. But this is not about separating him from failure. This is recognizing that too many things go wrong in this country because rather than go through the right process, you have to go to a minister.
Oh, this is a new approach.
For you, it would be.
All right.
Because you were willing to accept that kind of approach before. And my view on it has not changed from what it was then. The process is what we need to follow because that's where the failure lies in this country.
Well, the process is even more entrenched now since May 24th.
Well, that's your view.
Everything, all roads now lead to the minister.
That's your view.
All 26.
I'm not here to argue with you about that. I'm just here to say to you that all I'm defending here is the process.
All right. I want to get on to the two Barbadoses. For 8 long years, the black-skinned Prime Minister Stewart, from working-class origins, born in Marchfield and raised in Marchfield, his mother a maid and his father a sugar worker. He was vilified, criticized, and crucified for his facial configuration, his ineptness, his sloth, his non-communication, and he was categorized a political dunce. For 8 long years, the black-skinned Prime Minister Stewart. Now, over a 3-week campaign period, the Democratic Labour Party focused periodically, you know, on Mia Motley, her shortcomings and her inadequacies. And they incurred the wrath of heaven, brimstone and fire, criticism from all quarters, including the moderators of Brastat, and all of the Bleeding Hearts showered criticism from all quarters on the Democratic Labour Party for criticizing this lady for a 3-week period, and the whole campaign was not focused on Mia Motley. But for 8 long years, this working-class, black-skinned, big-nosed Prime Minister was criticized on end. That is the two Barbadoses that I'm talking about. I want to get on to the other thing, though, because if the Democratic Labour Party makes the mistake of putting anybody in its leadership that does not have pedigree, does not have a chiseled nose or brown skin from a middle-class origin or upper-class origin, they are going to suffer the same fate that they suffered under Stewart and under Sandy Ford. Black skin, their hue was of a darker skin color, and their nose did not fit the profile of some of these two Barbadoses. I tell you this, let's look at all of the prime ministers that were successful in Barbados, all brown skin, and all of socially accepted origins. Barrow, an aristocrat. Tom Adams, an aristocrat. St. John, an aristocrat. Arthur, barely qualified, though brown skin, because the Barbados Labour Party used him for what he was worth. They didn't even get a mention in the Covenant of Hope. And also Thompson, brown skin and of social origin. The two prime ministers who got all the licks in Barbados were all of a darker hue and all of a weaker social origin. That is the two Barbadoses that we have to deal with every single day in this country. And we have apologists walking about with their hypocritical tongues talking about there are no two Barbadoses. There are two distinct Barbadoses, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you very much. I will let others respond to you. Thank you. Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
I'm well, and you?
I'm amused and fascinated sometimes by some of these offerings. However,
you have nothing to say to that?
All it was, I really called to talk about something else, but I just make a mention. I would just say, if people say they're two barbarians, I would say they're more than two barbarians, because the barbarians that I grew up in, I saw, especially when I went to school, I saw distinct lines of separation between different sets of people. For instance, the white people who came from outside, they're not associated with the local whites. And we had also middle-class blacks, and we had lower-class blacks, and they didn't associate either. So it looks like there's more than two separations. As a matter of fact, why he would say this, that Barbados is not different anywhere. If you went to Trinidad, you get the impression that Trinidad had four Trinidads. There's a Trinidad for the blacks, one for the Indians, one for the Chinese, and one for the other people. That's the impression when I get when I live, when I go to Trinidad. People talking between themselves, the Chinese, this, and Indian, that. So you have these separations, these ethnic, social, and racial separation wherever you go. You can't get away from it. If you go to Guyana, you get the same profile. The blacks, the Indians, and the East Indians, and the ethnic Indians from the interior. You got that same profile, that each one feels that he or she is treated separate to the other one. So there's nothing new, but just still two barbarians is really nothing new. You know, it's just been going on, and it's going to continue. And no way I can stop it. Now, Mr. Ellis, you, I believe, I don't know if when you went to school, did you use things called proverbs, like all that glitter is not gold, and honesty is the best policy? And
all
so
those
you,
things, yeah.
Yes. You've did you find them helpful as a youngster, that they gave you some kind of guidance, you know, along the
well,
way?
Well, no, that I can separate them from other things that happened in my life. I mean, other people who reinforce positive aspects of life. I don't. Yep. I didn't separate one from the other.
But I saw, in my view, I saw these problems as signposts along the way for young people to get a grasp, a grip of where they can go or where they're going. But I find it strange nowadays that you don't hear them in the schools anymore. And I think that's what we need to young people to hear.
But the question is, have they been replaced by other things that reinforce the same values, though?
Not that I know of. I don't know if you know of any. You could tell me. Anything that they have in the schools that would replace problems, like, oh, like, this is not honesty, the best policy. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We don't hear that now. Mm-hmm. And that is where you see young people are so misguided. They don't seem to have any signposts along the way to tell them when they're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. Now, I have a problem here, Mr. Ellis. And my problem today is a word to the wise is enough. There's another one that says, where ignorance is bliss, it's folly to be wise. And another one that says, none so blind as those who will not see. And that's the one I'm going to start with. Because, Mr. Ellis, we have a problem, a serious problem in Barbados that has taken lives and using scarce resources every single day. Accidents, accidents, accidents. And I have heard, but for the sixth time, the police, people from the police traffic division, the superintendent was the last one that said it, that speeding is at the root of a lot of these serious and fatal accidents on our roads. Speeding, and yet still, you hear all the road safety experts, the people at NTW, don't seem that the motor insurance, we don't see. Where is it that we cannot simply reduce the top speed in Barbados back to what it was originally? And the top speed in Barbados originally was 50 miles an hour, I mean 30 miles an hour, which is 50 kilometers. But since we had Highway 2A and the Spring Garden, it went up to 80 all of a sudden. And that is way above what, when Highway 2A was completed and handed over by the engineers, the speed limit recommended was 60K. I remember that, 60K. All of a sudden, Spring Garden came along, and they went up to 80, dig a road right through three constituencies, look, any provision for the people to come out. And that is where the massacre started, Mr. Ellis. If you do the checking, you'll see. The massacre started on Spring Garden thing with that 80 kilometers. And then, lo and behold, the switch set to the highway to where, and the massacre continued. I am saying simply, sir, does it not make sense to reduce the high speed of 80 back to 60? I just have to do it for a year and see what happens.
Have you had a chance to check accidents on the Autobahn in Germany? I mean, that's a speedway which has no speed limit whatsoever. But I don't get the impression that Germany is considered to have more accidents than any other country. Have you checked it?
Mr. Ellis, you can compare Germany and Barbados.
But we are talking about speed. Here's a country with many, many, many vehicles on the road with no speed limit.
Mr. Ellis, if you look
so
at
then
Germany,
you may well find. I don't know. I haven't done the research, but you may very well find that the limitations that they may have on drinking, for instance, may make the difference.
Yeah.
At a time like this, sometimes people go to have a good crop over fat and stuff like that, go home at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those things can make the difference. But you need to do, the critical issue here is you got to do your research before you come to conclusions.
Now, Mr. Ellis, when I was in Ontario, I had the privilege to work at a place called the Department of Motor Vehicles. And they have a computerized system for assigning speed limits on roads. Now, the high speed that you're talking about and those continental roads, 3 or 4 lanes going in the same direction, and they have a separation bar between the others going in the opposite direction. That's the big difference, number one. If you have a collision with cars going in the same direction, you don't get the same result as a car coming in the same in the opposite direction because the impact speed is double. So that's the first thing. In Ontario, what they do is if a road does not have separation barriers, you cannot drive at high speed. That's number one. Number two, every road, its size, whether it has pedestrian facilities, whether it's in a commercial area, whether it's in a residential area, is taken into account when you're saying the speed. And as you turn off one road onto another, you see a speed limit. We are bragging about the number of people who come here, and you'll notice the number of hire cars that people have nowadays because our transportation is not reliable. And every now and then, I come across somebody who's driving off the side. I am saying that we need to bring our speed limit signs up to scratch and our signage up to scratch on the whole, because we're inviting foreigners to come here. We're giving them switch keys to drive. They come from countries where they drive on the right-hand side of the road, and yet still there's not one sign on our highways that says left-hand side, because to remind these people, because when people are not thinking, not concentrating, they do not remember these things and they do what comes naturally. Our signage needs to be improved. We need to put speed limit signs on all over. And your speed limit signs, from what you remember, is 60, should be at the top, 50 on the highways, and 40 on the secondary roads.
I took a look here, and you could do further research on it, but I wanted to look at what the world rate is. I look at a table here. I think it's from the World Health Organization. Road fatalities per 100,000 inhabitants per year. Barbados is at 6.7. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the same Germany that I just talked to you about is at 4.3.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Road fatalities per 100,000 motor vehicles. Barbados is at 16.9, and Germany, with all that goes with it, is 6.8.
Just want to tell you, because
all right. So you are saying to me that it all has to do with speed.
That's right.
I'm asserting to you that in a country that has no speed limit, you are seeing what I've just put to you. So.
Mm-hmm.
Is that conclusive? Possibly
not.
You need to look at other factors.
That's right. You have to look at the fact that on those continental roads,
he's an expert at everything, you know. He is now going to tell me a bit as though he has researched it already. When
Who's
he
that?
Already said he didn't.
Who is that?
You.
I told you to research it?
Yeah. You just told me earlier that you didn't research the Autobahn phenomenon versus what we have here.
No, I've told you that the structure of the roads is what makes the difference. If you look at those continental roads, okay, the high-speed roads are multi-lane going
all
in
right
the same direction.
All right.
You will never, ever see a high-speed road running adjacent to another road when you have the direction without a separation barrier.
So that's what happened on the you just said that the two major highways that created the problem and killed a lot of people, according to you,
yeah,
were Spring Garden and the ABC Highway.
Yeah, the two high-speed highways, yeah.
Right.
Mm.
They have so, that characteristic that
so
you just spoke about?
If you check with the police, if you check with the police, Mr. Ellis, you can check with the police there with me upstairs, because I have drawn this here from what the superintendent of police had to say.
All right.
And that's not the first time.
Okay.
The final point you want to make, sir,
mm-hmm,
is that we have a problem with gun violence in Barbados. And I've heard the police, the same police, asking the public to cooperate and bring information. Don't you think that the first item of cooperation that we should ask the public for is to provide a gun amnesty? We have done it before. A gun amnesty, 30 days, in which we put the gun in a plastic bag and come and drop it in a box, no questions answered or asked. And I think that if we get even 5 for the whole population, we will save 5 lives. Don't you think a gun amnesty is the order of the day? No, because to me, it's the shortest way home. If you can get people, and aunts and uncles and grandfathers and so on who know these things are, to put it in a plastic bag and come and drop it in a box, don't you think that is giving the public an opportunity to contribute to the peaceful return of peace in this country? Because no criminal is going to drop any gun anywhere. It is the families and the associates of these people who know where these guns and ammunition are. In Australia, a couple of months ago, they had a gun amnesty. 40,000 pieces of offensive weapons that they brought in. 40,000. I don't think Barbados will get there. But I think we're going to make a trade. A gun amnesty is in order. I don't know if you have to say it, sir. Hello?
I think the problem is bigger than that. Because even
might,
when
might
people...
Be bigger than that.
Yes, because even when you take the guns off the streets, you still have to deal with the thinking of people, and they will resort to other things. So that's where you got to start. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Down to brass tacks. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Hello.
Hey.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, how are you doing today?
Okay, I'm well.
Good. I want to do some references on it. I know you're the best person to deal with it. Now, I heard you last week. You know you just chastised me, and I get chastised you this morning.
Okay.
Where a guy called and said that the Democratic Labour Party cannot be trusted. And you said, no, you will not go that far.
He didn't say the Democratic Labour Party. He spoke specifically about members
of the
administration, and I could not accept that was,
okay,
was
right,
good
so let
enough.
Let me bring two pieces of evidence, because there's a journalist who said, you're not
well,
only
you got to produce the evidence.
Bring truth. All right, let me bring the evidence to you.
Yes.
You remember the Cahill issue where the former prime minister said that nothing cannot happen unless it come before him, and he was speaking in terms that he knew nothing of Cahill. You remember that? And then evidence revealed that he had signed a document pertaining to the same Cahill. You remember that?
You mean you're talking about... I don't know that he said he knew nothing about Cahill.
He said... Oh, right. Well, I'm going no further, because I know you good. You can find it as new.
No, I gotta be no. There's only one reason I would go in that direction because I know how politicians operate, and you gotta be specific about exactly what they said.
Okay, but I had the paper with me. If not, I would tell you, because you know I like to make my references. Now the other one was I heard in the last debate where it was said that $2 million from the NSRL would have gone to empower the welfare department. And it was said in Parliament not 1 cent was carried. There also was said on the NSRL issue that the NSRL was to pay the civil servants. You can remember that. Nothing so went on. Anyhow, that is enough for that. Now, I query with you during the days when the DLP was in power, and I talked about cost cutting, and I told you that, which you knew, that David Thompson in 1999 said that if the Democratic Labour Party did not get an influx of an injection of funds, the DNC would have collapsed. And that is where Owen Arthur introduced the $150,000 subvention to political parties who have members in Parliament. Remember that? Remember that, David?
Yeah, and?
And you went on and you tried to explain to me that the political parties need money. Now, let me ask you a question. With the absence of the Democratic Labour Party not having any members in Parliament now, you expect them to survive? If they had two, and the finances of the party was in dire straits, according to David Thompson, with the absence of not having any, what you think now?
Well, it is a test for them. I see a newspaper story today saying that there's no new blood vying for the leadership of the Democratic Labour Party in the August, at the annual general meeting in August, annual conference in August. And, you know, that's up to the Democratic Labour Party.
All right.
To sort out that particular situation. Those of us who are outside of the political party process can only speak about things in the context of what we see as being in the best interest of Barbados. There is a need, from where I sit, to have an organized Democratic Labour Party which expresses its point of view and makes its presence felt, notwithstanding the fact that it does not have a seat in Parliament. Today, you do not necessarily have to be in Parliament to make a difference. What makes the difference is that you know that there's a bill going before Parliament next week. You have got your own people to sit down, analyze the bill, look at its implications, and share with the public your concerns. If the bill is passed in the current, in its present form, then as an opposition, you are able to express your point of view. But your whole idea here is to be able to contribute to the process, the democratic process, without necessarily having to be in Parliament eating with how much money in food is it?
$20,000
in food, or $23,000 in food.
Yeah.
You know, at least in those circumstances, you can say that nobody had to feed you to be able to speak to the issues of the country.
All right.
Okay?
I got two last points to admit. And my last one would be on Andrew's factory. But let me deal with this one pertaining to the issue where that guy with the funny voice calling and he started looking at prime ministers who were elected because they were black. Let me look at it, because if you hear propaganda and you don't destroy it, people would believe it. You recall when Sir Lloyd became prime minister. There was also Richie Haynes who was actually up there looking to be a prime minister too. You remember that? And he was, this prime minister was elected with the hierarchy of the party. Remember that these members were elected by the masses. Because he could only become a prime minister first before you got to be a parliamentarian before a prime minister. So the country elected these people. So I don't know how. And then you look at the issue there with the last one he spoke about with Mr. Stewart. Chris Sinclair was also vying for the position. So it was democratically elected. And as I said, you had to be a parliamentarian first. So I don't know whether it is becoming political propaganda.
I really do think that when, you know, what he's presented here is that the two people who are the blackest of the group got less support. Now, remember, if you deal with Sir Lloyd Sandiford, you got to go back to what happened there, really. It is true to say that after the 1991 elections, we had people marching because we had to go to the IMF. But what caused the demise of this Sandiford administration? It had to do with problems within his own administration.
Exactly. That's what I got to do with it.
That's one. Now, Mr. Stewart has had essentially two terms because he took over in 2008 and in 2010, rather, and won the election of 2013. And generally speaking, Barbados has been seen as a two-term two-term country, unless the opposition can perform so badly and you can do so well, that on two occasions we've had, under Mr. Barrow on the one hand and under Mr. Arthur on the other, we have had those administrations getting three terms. To say that the whole reason why a person has had a tough time is only because they are black in this country, I don't know that is conclusive. Look, Bernard St. John, that he talked about, and he pelt his name inside there. You forget that Bernard St. John got beat as party leader in 1971. Mm-hmm. And then Bernard St. John lost his seat as prime minister.
As prime minister.
You know? I had only a short term. You know? I don't understand. Highly respected as a government minister. And let me tell you, wherever he represented Barbados, his name was one that kept this national flag flying high, because people who came into contact with him had immense respect for his brain and for what he was able to do when representing this country. But as a politician, I mean, was it because he said that he was from the upper class and he didn't, you know, and he wasn't black. But he suffered significantly.
And you know the propaganda that went against him in 71. I'll tell you something. I'm glad that Barbadians now are looking at the websites and picking up things. They don't accept them. In 97, I remember I was involved in politics for the first time, speaking on platforms in 1970 and 71. And I could remember the propaganda that went out against the Great Sahara. Then it was set on the Democratic Labour Party that Stella, the wife of, because that the name was used, the wife of Harry. All sorts of political nonsense. That's what got me to be so angry that sometimes I was not surprised when the things were said about me, that you all had a group in front cheering on these politicians. So these are the sort of people that cheer on these politicians when they're talking nonsense. But now we have a more alert group of electorates. That is why they suffer that. Now let me go on and add this back to you complete. Now, David, I want you to do some investigation. I received some news that they don't like. And if it is so, I would like the Minister of Agriculture to come out and tell us. I understand the property at Andrew's factory has been sold. I don't know. I said this is what I heard. I would like some investigation into that. And I want to know if Intertech is still operating, pulling down the building. And if that is not so, I would like to reclaim that land that above the factory, which I had lived next door, that ground had called kitchen door. I would like that piece of land returned, and I want the minister, the attorney general, to make sure that that land be placed at the facilities so that the people around that area should have a playing facility on that ground. That's where they used to
I think it is important for Barbadians to know exactly what happened with respect to Andrew's factory. I think we have not had an update on that for quite some time. And I'm anticipating that the new Minister of Agriculture will tell us what's going on there. Who now owns that property? And it is also important to get some details about the agreement or arrangement that was arrived at to bring us to where we are today. I know it was stripped of a lot of the equipment that it had. Some went to Port Vale. I don't know where the rest went, but the status of that is important. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air. Hello?
I'm a resident of Bushy Park, St. Philip. I'm calling.
Yes.
The issue with the party monarch yesterday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. Normally, what I must say up front, under the former representative, Mr. Michael Lashley, and the Minister of Culture, Stephen Lashley, who did an excellent job throughout the years with the residents of Bushy Park and Vineyard and surroundings, what will normally happen, because it's not only the party monarch day that we have that knowledge is at least 3 days. They will set up, and like on Wednesday, they will have a test run up to about 10 o'clock the night with the music. Then on the Friday, you know, you have the Calypsonians come in and do their warm-ups or whatever you call it, and then we have the party, the Monarch Day. What Mr. Lashley and the two Lashleys do, we issue tickets to help, you know, with the inconvenience of the noise and that sort of stuff. Sometimes, and the art and the residents will be able to enter to watch the show. After they don't have enough, the minister will come and a responsible resident will go and pinpoint when certain residents come, if they don't have enough tickets, and we will be able to enter the show. Two, when it first came, they had that same problem with entering and exiting for the residents. And the police realized that there are so many exits from Bushy Park and entrance, it didn't really have to turn the road into a one-way. But this time, it was a one-way. My daughter could not go to work because getting in and out was a nightmare. Because we got to come in at a certain time, and you bottleneck, you either have to go to Six Roads or you got to come to Padma. We could just come from the parcel entrance and go across and you home. So that was one. So I let the police the next time because there are so much exit and entrance into Bushy Park. They don't have to make it on one way because normally when they got carrier saying years ago when I had 30,000 people, in 2 minutes, Bushy Park empty, no problem getting in and out. If you got security, we could do the security checks. Yes, I understand. Put it both sides of the roadway. I can't understand where the security nowadays. But that was the main thing. Mr. Lashley made sure that all the residents of environment areas got passes. This time, I understood that did not happen, and it's a real inconvenience to the residents with 3 nights of noise. And you know, in certain areas, you can't go and keep noise for half hour.
So now, you conceded that residents put up with the noise because they derived the benefit. That's a separate issue from access to your home.
Yeah.
And as you said, your daughter couldn't get to work because of it. What surprises me is that this isn't the first time we've had this particular show up in there. By now, we should have a good idea of what are the do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
What are the ways of working with it so that you can have access? Okay, so you're putting the focus here on the police because you're saying basically that that's their area of concern.
Yeah, yes. But before the residents sit down, I know who was at the same group of officers was over it this time. But other times, what we had yesterday did not occur. We had it in a one way.
Yeah.
And even so, we could, certain policemen at certain areas.
So, why would they want to change it just like that? I mean,
I don't know.
It seems to me as that doesn't make sense. If something worked for you in the past, if you're going to change it, then you got to test it and try to make sure that the principal issue, which is access to and fro for the people who live in the area, is not affected in that way.
It's true. It is so
no, this should not come down to who is a political, who in power and who is not in power. I mean, if it comes to that, we're in trouble.
You know, this area is predominantly a Democratic Labour Party.
Oh, you see how you're going to go now. So you're not going to tell me they do it to upset you all, to penalize you.
I will not go that way.
Oh, okay.
I think in the future, I would like the representative and the Minister of Culture, who is well known, to come around and liaison with what we had before.
Well, but truth be told, I come back to where I was earlier. Are we running an efficient country or not? If the police have a responsibility for dealing with that, they're the ones who are supposed to come to you and sort it out.
Yeah.
Why should a minister of government or an MP have to be dealing with that? You know what bothers me about this? Why are we seeking to give so much power to these people? This is ridiculous. You pay other people to do that job. Force them to do what they're supposed to. Put the blame where it's supposed to be placed right now. The police were the ones who were supposed to get it right. They seem to have gotten it wrong. And they need to come and talk with you all about what went wrong and how they can fix it next time.
Yes.
Okay? And they should be discussing that internally right now. You know, what went wrong? Who was handling it this time that didn't handle it before? Right. Look, Barbados is full of examples of people who get put to do jobs who seem to believe that they have to do things differently because they got to make their mark. And they don't care about what anybody else says because they are making their mark in their way, no matter how silly it is. Okay? Those things, we need to cry out against them. All right? And you see it in so many ways. So I don't know. I can't say specifically it happened in this instance that somebody else is now in charge and they have decided that they're going to do it differently. But whatever they do, just to go consult with you all and make sure that it does not impede your access to your homes.
Yes, that is true.
Okay?
Okay, thanks very much, sir.
Thank you.